Welcome to the History of North America. I'm Mark Vinette. Hunting was vital to Iroquois subsistence and way of life. Let's learn more from the Iroquois History and Legends podcast.
Iroquois History and Legends, how they lived.
Gathering, hunting, fishing, and agriculture.
Let's talk about hunting. They hunted and trapped all sorts of different animals from the Northeast. Their main source of meat was white-tailed deer. The main reason why there was such big white-tailed population is because deer are not a deep woods animal. They love living right on the edge of fields and trees. So because of the mass burnings and the fields and the way they would tear the bark off of the trees, it would create all of this open area that the whitetail really thrived in. So this became their main thing to hunt. But on top of whitetail, there was also elk at the time. There no longer is. But they found from excavating sites that there were elk bones. Most likely, they would come across an elk doing a whitetail drive and take it as an opportunity because they were still somewhat rare even back then. And black bear. So these were the three big animals that they hunted, the black bear, the elk, and the white-tailed deer. But there were all sorts of various younger animals. For example, ducks and turkeys, woodchucks, porcupines, beavers, frogs, and a passenger pigeon. The passenger pigeon was the largest flock in weight volume. It was the largest land living creature as far as mass in the world.
There were millions and millions and millions of them in flocks, and they said that it blotted out the sky.
When their flocks were at their biggest, it was something like 15 billion birds.
Unbelievable. And they're all gone.
So the passenger pigeons are all gone. They went extinct in the mid-1800s.
Yeah, they think the last ones maybe early 1900s. Okay.
And they were driven to extinction by the white settlers mass hunting them. And the reason that they didn't go extinct with the natives here, they had a system for gathering the passenger pigeon. When they would all come in and lay their eggs and then grow, they would shake the young birds out with long poles. And they would only harvest the young birds right before they were able to fly. And they would leave all the adult birds to reproduce and come back every year. So it's just interesting that they had the insight to not waste the adult birds, get the young ones right before they can fly. We have a nice young tender bird. They're fully feathered and starting to fly, kind of bouncing along, half flying. That's when they would gather them. That's the passenger pigeon. Lots of these animals had all sorts of different uses on top of just meat and fur. For example, like the porcupines, they could use those for knitting your fishnets and things like that. You could use the needles for all sorts of cool things. Also, they had wolves here and coyotes. And they also had long-bodied animals, the cougar and the fisher, which is a weasel. And they had a spiritual belief that separated long-bodied animals. They looked at them like they were bad luck or mischievous animals, so they held them in separate regard. Let's talk about the different types of deer hunting, because this is their main source of meat.
A lot of times you think of the solitary deer hunter walking around with a bow and arrow and silently stalking a deer.
That's true. The majority of their hunts where they actually took large amounts of deer were in their drives, but they did, on occasion, go out and try and stalk a deer and hunt it down. Some cool techniques. They would actually dress up with the antlers. They would actually put on a deer pelt with the stuffed head and stalk through the woods, and when the deer looked at them, they'd get down on all fours.
They identified their prey and the target beyond. They would sneak up on them dressed as another deer.
And also the pelt would help mask their scent. Deer, their main form of defense is their sense of smell. So anything you can do to minimize your smell, you can actually get very close to them. But let's talk about the different types of driving and how that worked.
They made sure that the deer came to them. It took a lot of work. They would build fences.
They would actually build palisade fences and also fell trees to help. And maybe even people from neighboring clans are there helping you. You could have hundreds of people doing this where you could do 5 square miles of driving. These palisades, picture a V basically, and they could be 2-3 miles long.
Yep, so think of it as a V going at a right angle. And at the end, you've got a little opening. So it's like a funnel. So in that little opening, you've got a little pen on the inside. So they would start a swinging maneuver. They could start a fire on one side or have all the people standing just a little bit apart, and they start pushing. And the deer are going to run away from the people. So they start running away, and they run into a fence like, oh, can't go this way. It's blocked. And they just keep going down the line.
A whitetail can jump an 8-foot fence, no problem. But these palisades, they would sometimes be falling over trees and scrub and brush. So what they'd do is they'd very slowly drive them. They'd be walking behind them for a mile, just enough to kick them up and get them to go in that direction. That way, when they came to a small wall, it would just be more convenient for them to keep going and working their way down the funnel. But if you actually scared them, they would almost always leap over the palisades and escape. So you wanted to make them feel like they were just kind of walking away from an unknown predator until they got further and further down the funnel.
And then they've got this tight area, and they just walk through. And then once they get inside, you stand at the entrance, and it's shooting fish in a barrel. That's what it was. You have them all corralled, and then you can harvest them.
And there were writings of a settler describing how an Iroquois deer drive looked. It says, "The Iroquois tribe usually made their barricades with brush fence 2 to 3 miles long. They started the drive by setting fires to the woods at the ends of the corral. Parties of the braves patrolled the sides of the V to prevent most of the deer from leaping over it. The deer were eventually driven to the apex where the other hunters took them." Also, you have Indians walking back and forth that mile trying to make noise or get your scent around to keep them inside that corral so they don't jump the fence.
So how many deer are we talking about?
You have 300 people building this palisade and coming out to do this drive. It was actually recorded where in the hunting season, the clan villages would almost be abandoned at this point. Even the women, even though they weren't necessarily hunting, they would come along to help butcher. But Champlain noted in Montreal, when he watched a Huron deer drive, that 120 deer were taken in one hunt. Some deer were also taken with snares. Snares, we don't really use them in hunting too much these days. If you picture a rope, there's a way where you can double loop it in such a way where an animal can walk through the loop, and as it goes through and pulls on it, it pulls tighter and tighter until the point where the harder the animal pulls on the loop, the tighter that it gets to the point where it suffocates the animal to death.
Deer being hung up by the snares. So they harvested these deer, they took all the meat.
They didn't want to waste anything. And they didn't have all the resources as far as technology that we had today. So they had uses for all the different parts of the deer. For example, their clothes were predominantly made out of whitetail, leather, and fur. And it actually takes 5 deer for one person. Could be a little less, a little more than that. But even out of the 120 deer they took that one day, that's not a lot of clothes in leather. And they had other uses too, like the bones could be used to carve for spears and fish hooks and
needles.
These drives tended to take place.
They took place in the fall because you don't want to go out and grab deer in the spring when they're all malnourished and have no meat on their bodies.
The does are all pregnant in early spring, and they've all gone the whole winter without having much to eat. And that takes basically every ounce of fat in their body to sustain the young fawns inside them, and they have barely anything to eat. They're biting bark off trees at that point. These deer drives were done in the peak of fall, October, November, when all the deer were at their fattest. Back then, fat was essential. You would take the deer fat and you could store it. It wouldn't rot like meat. You could store the fat and process it, add it to your food later, use it for other things. So these all took place in fall. But that's not to say that you wouldn't hunt a deer in a different type of year. It was just the deer driving season tended to be that time of year when you're getting the large amounts of deer. You could still be an opportunist hunter and hunt deer throughout any other time of the year. If you're in the need of meat and you see a deer, you're going to hunt it. They had other ways of catching deer besides driving, but there were also deadfalls. Basically, what you do is you take 2 sticks and you notch them in such a way that when they're standing perfectly straight and attached, they're sturdy like a tree. But then if any pressure comes to bending them, they give way because they're notched in such a way that they're together. So they would set these up and then they would set huge logs and rocks, a ton of weight on top of this, and then put meat down inside the bars. So if a bear or something else came through and pulled at the stick, it would fall and crush it instantly, killing it. Even though they were gathering these different animals and even plants and inanimate objects, they looked at everything as if it had a spirit. They didn't see anything wrong with capturing a deer and eating it and using it for substance. But at the same time, they wanted to respect that animal's spirit.
Because it just died for you.
They looked at it as if it sacrificed itself. So they had certain ways that they would respect the animal even after they harvested it. And one of those was not to leave the rest of its body behind, to be eaten by wild animals and to rot in the earth. Say you shot a deer and you left its bones for the wild animals. They believed that the spirit would be angry at you for disrespecting it. So they would actually bury the bones and anything else that they didn't use out of respect for the animal.
And they would also give a thanks, saying thank you for sacrificing yourself, giving your life so that we may continue to live. It was a very polite and respectful way, because they believed if they were not polite and respectful, the deer weren't going to allow themselves to be killed anymore.
And they believed that the spirits of the animals that had died would tell the other spirits of the animals that were alive about it. And then the animals wouldn't let you hunt them anymore. And there were certain animals that this was especially the case. They really tried hard to be respectful to their spirits, and that's the deer, the beaver, moose, porcupine, birds, and fish.
Check out the YouTube version of this episode, which has accompanying images. I'm Mark Vinette, and I hope you're enjoying the ride. The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art, inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.